Welcome to the Mommy Beta Podcast. This is episode 34. We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood. And today we are going to talk about a skin cancer scare that one of us had. The dangers of missing a nap for the babies, of course, but mommies need naps too. Dealing with picky eaters and the hazards of bubble wrap parenting style. With us on the line today is just the other Natalie. We just have two Natalies. The other mommy betas are unavailable today, but that's okay. We have plenty to talk about. How are you doing?
I'm great. Morning, everybody.
Yes, good morning. Well, actually, it's the afternoon on the East Coast. But
that's true.
So I'm having a good week. This is the podcast where we talk about the things that we've been blogging about on mommybeta.com. And I posted a blog this week about a little scare that we had with a possibility of skin cancer. And I really was debating over whether or not I wanted to share this at all because, I don't know, maybe I was a little embarrassed about going through it or I was embarrassed about what I felt. But if you read the blog post titled "It's Not a Tumor" on mommybeta.com, you'll see a little bit about it. And basically, my son had some little moles under his eyes. And when they showed up around 7 months, I really didn't think anything of it at all. I said, oh, it's just some kind of little thing. But my husband would say, oh, is it unsightly? Should we have it removed while he's little? And then maybe, you know, it won't be a big scar and maybe he'll have wanted us to. We didn't know. And I was like, no, it's cute, whatever. But when he suffered the staph infection, which I talked about on the blog over the summer, the dermatologist or the doctor, actually the pediatrician, said, why don't we get this checked out? So we went to a dermatologist who measured it for 3 months just to make sure it didn't grow. But after the 3 months, a second one had come up. And this was just before Christmas. We went in for our follow-up appointment. And again, I didn't really think much of it. But when we went in for this diagnosis or went in for the second follow-up appointment, she mentioned something that she thought was called juvenile xanthogranuloma, which is JXG. And she kind of flippantly said, well, you know, that could be associated with a type of cancer, so we want to have it removed. I'm going to refer you to a pediatric dermatologist. She goes, I just don't know much about this. You want someone who sees it a lot. So I'm just going to refer you and that's it. And I was like, what? You just said cancer. And I wrote in the post that when you're holding your baby in a doctor's office, that's the last word you ever, ever, ever want to hear, ever. I was just going to give you a chance to respond.
Yeah,
it's not an oration.
I don't have the words. I mean, you know, and I think I did blog about it. We had some health issues early on with Nick, and, you know, he ended up having to have surgery, and it was very traumatic, but I knew that it was something that wasn't life-threatening. It was more of a nuisance that needed to be fixed than something that was really going to cause a problem down the line. And even just dealing with that was really, really hard. So I can't even imagine that kind of feeling of the unknown and the fact that you had to wait, I mean, almost a month, right? Weeks to see somebody to follow up?
It was 2 weeks. And thankfully, I had made the appointment before the follow-up with the adult dermatologist because I knew that the pediatric dermatologist was hard to get into. So we only had, it was like a week and a half between appointments. But still, that was a long time to sort of manage my anxiety.
It's a lot of time to Google.
Yes. Yeah. And like I wrote in the post, the dermatologist had said, Google's not your friend in this case because some of the things that are associated with JXG can be really scary. For instance, a certain type of leukemia is associated with JXG, some epilepsy, certain seizures, vision impairment. But they're so, so rare that, you should be able to calm your nerves when someone says this to you, but I just didn't have the information. So I had asked a friend of a friend for some information who's a dermatologist, and he gave me some great advice. He referred me to the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, which he says is the second best children's hospital, second only to Boston on the East Coast. And I called there to make an appointment for a second opinion just, you know, to be safe. And they weren't taking appointments until June. They're that backed up, that dermatology appointment.
That's crazy.
So I thought, well, you know, I'll pull out some stops if I have to. My husband has a friend who works at that university, and he might have been able to get us in. But I was sort of holding that off to see what would happen. And we went into the dermatologist appointment on Tuesday. She took one look, and she said, yeah, that's JXG. It's definitely JXG. It's going away. It already is. It's going to go. And I go, oh, so you don't need a biopsy? You don't need this? She goes, no, you can already tell it's going away because of the coloring. It started out a little bit brown, and now it's a little bit more red. And the fact that the second one came up and it's so tiny, you can barely see it. And that one also is the color of something that will go away. She said, we're going to watch it. You come back in 6 months, and we're also going to prescribe an eye exam with a pediatric ophthalmologist. But she's like, this is going to clear up. And I would never do a biopsy and scar him, because I had braced myself for that, for to go to the doctor's office and have them strap him down in some kind of straight jacket and do a biopsy and maybe scar him. Like, I was prepared for it mentally, but you can't ever really prepare for yourself for that.
And you had to go to this appointment by yourself, right? Because Clayton's at CES?
Yeah, he is. And my mother-in-law volunteered to come out and go with me. But then at the last minute, she had a work obligation that precluded that. And she was very apologetic about it. And I thought it was so, so sweet that she offered at all. But in the end, I'm glad she didn't, because she would have gone, come out here for an appointment where the doctor just shrugged her shoulders and said, that's nothing.
Right.
But it wasn't nothing to me, you know. To me, I had gone through all of this in my head, like, what if I do have a sick child, and what if we do have to have it removed in a surgery, and then what if it isn't benign? And, you know, you ask yourself all these questions that are almost not even worth asking yourself, because you make yourself so crazy.
My favorite part of your post, where you talked about this kind of moment of clarity that you had in the shower, I guess the morning of the appointment, where you could just kind of accepted that, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm going to find the beauty in it, and I'm going to move forward. I think that that's amazing that you were able to do that in that moment.
Well, because what are your options? You can't quit as a mom. We don't have any options to just say, I'm not dealing with this. You have to deal with it. So I just said, and I noticed in the first couple of days after his diagnosis, and maybe parents of children who have more chronic illnesses noticed this as well, that I was treating him differently. And I didn't want to be a parent of a sick child, even if he did have something more serious. I didn't want to, like, oh, well, you don't have to brush your teeth, or you don't want to do that. Don't do that. You know, mommy's going to let you do anything. You want to hit, or, you know, throw things, or not eat your food, just eat pizza, whatever, you know. And I didn't want to do that. I noticed a little bit of it in myself. And that was, it was kind of a really poignant moment where I wondered how people can still be good parents even when they're faced with these challenges.
I read this blog. It's called About Cole, and it's about a little boy who's actually in our local area who's dealing with aggressive brain cancer. And his dad writes the blog, and it's amazing to see how much of a normal life he has outside of, you know, hospital treatments and chemo and immunotherapy. I mean, it's amazing. They play video games and they hang out with their friends. And this little boy is just so resilient. And his parents are doing such an amazing job of giving him a childhood in between all of this craziness. And I think that is so commendable.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think there's something we can all learn from this. And like I said in my post, the one thing that I learned from this is, look, parenthood, this is not the end of it being scary. I've got another one on the way. Yeah. And that's scary enough where you think, like, what if it has this, or what if it comes out with this? And so the only thing you can really do is commit to living your life every single day in pursuit of what's beautiful instead of what's scary, because that is no way to live.
Well said.
So enough about that. You can also always send us your comments or comment on the post at mommybeta.com. We wanted to talk about something that's going on in the news. There's this new study that one of us found about how naps, or lack thereof, put toddlers at risk for mood disorder. So when toddlers skip even just one day of their nap, there's all of these negative repercussions like anxiety, lower levels of joy and interest, and reduced problem-solving abilities. And you had an interesting reaction to this.
Yeah, when I read this, we're currently having a few issues with Nick. One is, so he went through this kind of bout of pushing and hitting in the fall. And it, for the most part, had resolved itself by around Christmas time. He'd push every once in a while, but it was pretty rare. And then just after the new year, it's back with a vengeance. We actually had to leave preschool yesterday because he was doing so much pushing. And the final straw was he was hitting a little girl over the head repeatedly with a shovel in the sandbox. So I had to pull him out and we left because he wasn't listening. We tried timeouts, you know, we tried responding to the other child instead of giving him the attention. And it's just, nothing's working at this point. And in tandem, we're having a sleep issue. He's waking up super early in the morning, like 4 or 5 in the morning, and not really wanting to go back to sleep. So we've tried a few things. And one of the things that we've tried, based on the suggestion of a few friends and our preschool teacher, is shortening his afternoon naps, because he was sleeping for sometimes 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon. And they thought, well, you know, because what time we put him to bed didn't matter what time he woke up. That just didn't have anything to do with it. So they thought, well, you know, if we shorten the afternoon nap, he's getting less sleep in the afternoon, so maybe he'll add that onto his nighttime sleep. And it's been kind of working off and on. So I'm wondering if the fact that we've been shortening his afternoon nap has kind of contributed to his aggressive behavior now that I read this. So now I'm torn. Now I don't know what to do. I don't know, you know, if I let him sleep for 3 hours in the afternoon, is he going to wake up at 4 and be nice to kids? Is that okay? Like, would I rather get up with him at 4 every morning if he's not being a bully on the playground? So,
but
kind of in a quandary about
this. But is he going down for his nap fine in the
afternoon? Oh, yeah.
He goes down okay.
Oh, yeah. And he does not want to wake up after, because I've been waking him up after 2 hours, and it's actually really cute. He's kind of like a teenager where it's like, no, mom, don't get me out of bed. He covers his face with his teddy bear and he goes, more sleepy, more sleepy. So he's definitely not ready to get up. And in the morning, he's sometimes he seems rested and sometimes he doesn't. So I just don't know what to do. But now it makes me think that maybe, you know, this all could be related.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, and you always have been too, never wake a sleeping baby, right?
Yeah, except for, you know, Healthy Sleep Habit says only wake a sleeping baby if you're doing it to preserve their sleep schedule, which is what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So his other suggestion, which I think maybe is going to be our last resort, is to start putting them down earlier. He goes to bed around 7:30, which is actually, it works really well for us. It's perfect in our schedule, but you know, maybe we have to change that to make him a happier baby. You know, maybe we need to start putting him down at, you know, 6:30 or so. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do that, but, you know, it might be a sacrifice we have to make everybody happy. So
it's hard. I put Miles down at 6:30 and that's usually the latest because he just can't handle it. He's a different, his personality starts to change a little. And so he sleeps from about 6 to 6. So I have to get up with him whether I want to or not.
Yes, 6 would be fabulous. If he could sleep till 6, I'd be so happy. You know, it's like this morning was 4:20 and I got up. I gave him a bottle and actually was able to get him back to sleep this morning. But that's unusual. Usually he's up around 5 and he's up. So
now, Dr. Weisbluth, this Healthy Sleep Habit says to leave him in there until 7 or 6, no matter
what. We've tried that, and he'll just sit in there, and he goes, Mommy, 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 on nonstop for 40 minutes. Yeah, and he even started going, Mommy, hugging, Mommy, hugging, like he just wants to hug me. And I mean, that's just, it's brutal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was our tact for the first probably month. We would just leave him in there, and it wasn't doing anything for anybody, so...
Because if he's not teaching himself to put himself back down, then that's not really...
Yeah, what's the point? Yeah. So, you know, I almost think he's ready for something like those talk clocks that change color. You know, if it's blue, it means you need to be asleep. If it's yellow, it means you need to wake up. Dr. Weisbluth says 3, but he knows his colors and he knows... You know, like even with this whole hitting thing, he'll recite what he did and know that it's wrong. So I don't know. If the putting him to bed earlier doesn't work, I might try the talk clock.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the theory is, right, that sleep begets sleep. So
right.
It might work. But or maybe you can give him maybe a tiny bit more sleep in the afternoon and see if that still works. Because Miles is taking a long nap. He's only doing 1. He goes down around noon or 12:30 and then sleeps till about 3. And then, you know, to put him down to bed just 3 hours later, I thought wasn't going to work, but he still is ready. He's ready at 6:30.
Yeah. If I let Dom sleep, he'll sleep until 5 sometimes and then go back to down at 7:30. So, I mean, that's definitely not a problem for us. So I got to do something.
Yeah. But I think we're going to put a link to this article in the show notes as well. It's just such an interesting causality because one missed nap really starts to manifest itself in negative ways. And it just shows how important sleep is. And I think all of us read that Weisbluth book and it was so eye-opening about all of the health effects and all of the... There was even a part about clumsy children, children who are characterized as clumsy most of the time.
I don't remember that.
It's towards the end of the book. Most of the time are more sleep deprived.
I wonder if Jennifer didn't get much sleep as a kid. She's the clumsiest person I know. I've never seen anyone break more wine glasses.
Maybe she doesn't sleep now.
Maybe.
She does work hard. She's a hard worker.
Oh, so, too funny.
Anyway, well, let us know what you think about this, because naps are certainly something that, you know, we all need. And I'm just crossing my fingers that when baby number two comes along, I can synchronize the naps. But I've heard that that's so hard with a toddler and a newborn. So
I know. I was just thinking the other day. So a newborn, yeah, I forget that they don't go to sleep until like 10 or 11. So that means that you're up until 10 or 11 with the newborn, and then you're back up at 6 with Miles, plus getting up twice maybe a night to feed the newborn.
Yep. I'm going to be a troll doll. I'll look like a troll doll. I know.
Sorry.
That's all right. I know what I signed up for. Well, before we move on to another news story, I wanted to tell you about Gazelle.com. They are our show sponsor this week. They're a website that allows you to sell your used consumer electronics for cash or cash credits. So what you do is you go around your house, you see about the things that you either don't want anymore, you want to upgrade, or you're not using, and you go to Gazelle.com and type in the value of, or type in the name of that thing. They will give you a value. If that value is agreeable to you, they'll help you ship that thing to them, and then they'll either resell it or recycle it in some way. They have use for it and you don't. They'll either send you a check in the mail, a PayPal payment automatically, or an Amazon gift credit. So it's a great way to look around your house and see what you're not using and find cash for things that are just sitting there, otherwise not doing you any good at all. And seeing that the Consumer Electronics Show is just this week, maybe you have your eye set on some new electronics and you can get rid of those old electronics without really spending the whole value of that new thing. So we like them a whole lot. We thank them for their support of the Mommy Beta podcast. And when you're checking out, you can always tell them that you heard about them through the Mommy Beta podcast, or when you tweet them, it's Gazelle_com, and tell them that you heard about them here on this show. We appreciate that a lot. So moving on. So not only, Natalie, are you dealing with a little bit of sleep issues, but you're dealing with picky toddler eating syndrome, which I've been dealing with as well. And you wrote about this and I thought, oh my gosh, she read my mind. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with Nick.
He's actually been a little bit better since I wrote the post, but he just all of a sudden doesn't want to eat anything that he used to love. He used to love cheese. I would get this like fresh mozzarella and I'd cut it into hunks and he'd eat like yards of it. It was amazing. And he would eat avocado and he'd eat any fruit in the book and, you know, a handful of veggies. And, you know, for a long time, he loved the purees. He's been off the purees for a while, but he just was a really good eater. And now he just, I think it's him trying to assert a little control. You know, he won't eat cheese. He basically will eat crackers and usually there's one fruit at a time, maybe two that he'll eat. He'll usually eat blueberries. He won't eat yogurt anymore. He wants, you know, maybe four or five different things and that's about it. And they're not necessarily the most nutritious things. He won't really eat meat these days. It's basically crackers and raisins are his standbys. So, I was trying smoothies and the smoothies worked for about a week, like I predicted. And now I say the word smoothie and he cries. And I think it's because he got, I think I was maybe a little too aggressive with the smoothies and he had some bad diaper days and ended up with a pretty bad diaper rash. Oh, so now I think he's a smart kid. I think he associates the smoothies with the diaper rash. So he cries when I say the word smoothie. So I haven't gotten to try my new stainless steel straws yet.
Oh, well, I mean, think about what it would do to you to eat nothing but smoothies.
Well, it was like one smoothie, like a quarter of a smoothie a day, basically. But it was, you know, one of the bigger chunks of things he was eating. So it wasn't a good deal. Yeah. So what will Miles eat these days?
Well, he goes through his phases as well. And so we had a good run with some blueberry pancakes. I found this whole wheat mix at Whole Foods. And so that was working. And then I got the Baby Poat, which is made by the same company that makes the Baba. And because he'll eat squeezers, those little squeezer things. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes if he doesn't want to eat his vegetables, then I'll just kind of squeeze a little vegetable in him from the squeezer. And that works because he can sort of... He doesn't have to stop what he's doing too much. I can just sort of chase him around and squeeze a little, you know, vegetables in him and he's fine. So the Baby Poat works a little bit, but sometimes he doesn't really want to do that either. We've done some smoothies and that works. And then I realized lately that he wants a lot more independence when it comes to food. He doesn't want me to feed him. So if I cut it up, he'll do that. But and then the second thing that's worked for us really well is that we bought a gym membership to a local gym, and it's one of those, you know, that has an indoor pool that's has a little wading area.
Cute.
So if I take him swimming every day, he's famished. And so I know that's a bit of a luxury purchase because, you know, an indoor pool is not accessible to everyone in the winter time, but I just have to tire him out, which of course tires me out, and I'm pregnant, so it's a little bit harder. But at the same time, it does get him to eat and sleep really well. So, you know, if there's not a pool, I guess, in your area, you could always do some kind of gymboree or...
Take him to the park and make him fetch a ball.
Yeah, something. So, I mean, I just literally just exhaust the kid, and then he's starving. And we've transitioned off of bottles recently, so I'm trying to make sure that he does it, because that was hard too, because I was like, well, he's not eating, I'm just going to give him another thermos full of milk.
Right.
And then I felt guilty about that too. So you know, I've just been kind of resourceful at just cutting his food really small. Also, Jennifer recommended the Tyler Florence book called Start Fresh.
Oh, right.
And I bought it, and it had some really good ideas in there. Some, you know, things that you can chop up that are, you know, because you want to allow your child to develop a more sophisticated palate than hot dogs and pizza.
Right.
So what I really liked about your post about how it was really hard for you to stay calm about it, because I didn't know how much this would upset me, like having a child that won't eat and just, you know, wants to keep playing. And I hate waste. And
yeah.
So I worked so hard at making all of his baby food, and then to get to this stage anyway, which is what I thought I would avoid by all of that. It's amazing how upsetting it can be on you, right?
Yeah. And I learned kind of early on that I can't expect him to always eat what we're eating, which is a bummer, because I always wanted that to be my philosophy. It, you know, I made roasted chicken with vegetables the other night, and I had no expectation of him eating it. I knew he wouldn't. I knew it was going to be our dinner, and he was going to have blueberries and cream cheese toast or something for dinner. And I never wanted to be that parent, but you know, the kid's got to eat. And it's not like I'm feeding him crap. He's still eating healthy stuff. He's just, you know, not necessarily eating the stuff I want him to eat. So, you know, I think that's going to be a gradual thing. And I was the world's pickiest eater. I don't think I ate anything but a hamburger in a restaurant until I was 18. So, you know, I just am going to have to, you know, do what I have to do and make sure what he's eating is at least on the healthy range, and let him make some decisions for himself, and just know that I don't have control over it.
I've also tried some smartphone apps. This is one that I reviewed for Consumer Reports this week called ABC Food. And it's just got like fun pictures and spellings and activities around food, because I want him to sort of be excited about the idea of it. So he loves to look at, he loves to say the word apple and point them out in storybooks. And so, you know, I thought that maybe if he's excited about the idea of an apple, then he'll eat. He doesn't eat cheese either, which I think is the weirdest thing ever.
Me too.
And so, you know, I thought maybe, and he says the word cheese, he likes to say it, but he doesn't eat it. So I don't know, you know, that there are some great suggestions on our blog here. Someone said, put olive oil in your smoothies, just a little.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Boost.
Although the trouble with that is I usually end up eating the remainder of the smoothie.
Right. You're giving yourself the calorie boost.
Extra calorie boost.
Yeah. But smoothies seem to be a real popular one. That's how a lot of people are resorting to that. And in the Tyler Florence book, it says that, you know, just eating together is something that will eventually get your children eating and cooking together. They said the studies show that families that eat together result in adults that eat more fruits and vegetables and drink fewer carbonated and caffeinated drinks.
I totally see that. I mean, I remember even, I think, blogging about that when I was, you know, making purees and things. You know, I just had more vegetables in the house and I was trying to set a good example. And, you know, we don't drink a lot of soda around here, but, you know, we know if we have, you know, an Orangina or something out that he's going to want it. So we try not to bring those things out. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah. But I think it's a constant pursuit. I don't think that it's going to be solved, you know, and I have to resolve myself that some meals are going to be super successful. Like last night I got him home from the pool and I served him a whole wheat quesadilla. He'll eat the cheese inside of something like that. He just doesn't snack on cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So I served him a whole wheat quesadilla with some asparagus and mushrooms on the side, and he ate all of it.
Wow.
But he was starving. Yeah. He likes mushrooms. I'll saute them up in
mushrooms.
Some butter. And
that's
he does
a good idea.
Like, yeah. But you know, I tired him out in the pool for half an hour. So
right.
he was hungry and he ate well. And, you know, and then of course, positive reinforcement. And this was something they talked about on Daddy on Board not long ago. Because Mike, one of the hosts of that show, is a terribly picky eater. And he says, you know, you have to realize that nothing you do to force it is going to work. And the more you make it an unpleasant experience to try new things, the less likely they are to try new things.
Right.
And so I could see sometimes my husband will get frustrated and he'll say like, come on, you know, eat this. Show me how you eat this. And he'll kind of hold his head. And I'm like, you can't make that. That's not going to work for us. So,
right.
You know, and so at least I feel like I'm not the only one that's frustrated.
Right.
I know he's frustrated too.
One other thing that's worked a little bit for us is, and I think Miles is probably just getting to be old enough for this, is we leave snacks out for him now. Like he has his own little table and chairs, and I have a plate with some healthy snacks just kind of sitting out at all times. And that way he can kind of choose when he's going to eat. I usually have some crackers and some raisins and some grapes or some blueberries or, you know, things, you know, whole grains, that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's been good for him to give him a little control over what he's eating. And that way, you know, he's eating when he's hungry, because that's the other thing is sometimes they're just not hungry at mealtime. You know, they want it at a different time. So we've had a little bit of luck with that. And it's actually neat to see him be able to just go up and take a bite of, you know, a muffin or something that I've made for him and leave the rest of the plate and not throw it all over the place. It's neat to see him kind of developing that restraint.
Yeah, that is. Well, that's a good idea too, because I can't always tell when he's hungry as well. And since he sleeps from, you know, 12 to 3, sometimes he wants lunch before the nap and sometimes he doesn't. And then sometimes he wakes up hungry and sometimes he doesn't. So, you know, it's nice to give him that option. Well, the last story that we thought we would talk about comes from Yahoo News. And this is a story about bubble wrap parenting versus slow parenting, which is something that I ponder a lot. It talks about how there's a new show on the Canadian Broadcasting Center called Bubble Wrap Kids. And it's about sort of, it just opposes slow parenting versus the helicopter parenting, where people who micromanage every little detail of their child's lives versus people who kind of just let them, you know, be who they're going to be, do what they want to do. I tend to sort of, I think I like to stride, you know, halfway down the middle. I do like him to, I want him to be who he is. But this woman here talks about letting her 8-year-old go on the subway alone. I don't think I'm that free-spirited. But what do you think about this?
You know, I've thought a lot about this. I think my innate tendency is to be a little hovery, but I know that that's not what I want to be. It's funny because I know, Sean's mom, she's wonderful, but she's the, you know, and she would admit this to you too. She's the quintessential helicopter parent. And it comes from her parents. When Sean was little, they lived down the street from a park, and Donna, Sean's mom, would walk Sean and his sister Shireen to the park, and Donna's dad would drive next to them in the car to make sure that they got to the park safely.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's ingrained in her. She has, you know, no other option really. And she, you know, is a wonderful parent. Sean turned out great. But, you know, he also pretty much let his mom choose which college he went to, you know, and I want a little bit more independence for Dominic. So I struggle because I know, you know, if I were to let Dominic, you know, kind of out of my sight at the park, that would probably make Donna very nervous. And, you know, cause so I kind of struggle with what I kind of want to do and what, you know, my parents might think is okay. And what Sean's parents might think is okay. You know, if I, you know, my mom's very obsessed with like life jackets and being around the water. And, you know, if she'd seen a few of the things that we've done, she would just be going crazy seeing Dominic in a waterfall in Michigan, you know? So those kinds of things. You know, it's hard. I think I am with you in that I kind of would like to be down the center of things. You know, I don't think I'm going to be letting Dominic, you know, ride BART to the city when he's 8. and it's funny because they call her, that woman has the nickname of the world's worst mother. Because the internet blew up with, you know, all the stories about her letting the kid ride the subway. But now she has a whole book on slow parenting and she's kind of the expert on this bubble wrap kids show. But I think, you know, I want him to have some freedom. I want him to be able to ride his bike in the neighborhood when he's a bit older and, you know, do those things that, you know, they're talking about the bubble wrap kids show that, you know, the kids aren't allowed to play in the front yard by themselves. And these are like 12-year-olds, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be that mom. You know, I don't want to ride next to Dominic in the car on the way to the park when he's, you know, an adult. But, I also think that you need to have a little bit of restraint and a little bit of common sense. So it's hard.
It is hard. I had a curfew of 11 p.m. when I was 20. So, oh, wow. You know, I was raised by a very protective mom. And now that I'm a mother, I realize why she made the decisions that she made and why she felt the way she did. But I really, and I asked myself, how the heck am I going to not overprotect and over, you know, how am I not going to bubble wrap him? And even, you know, he has friends that live across the street that are his age. And I'm thinking, at 5 years old, how am I going to let them ride their bikes without just constantly looking out the window? Or, you know, maybe five, I don't know. Like, I don't know how this is going to evolve. I have no idea. I only know it. And I think that this article, that which we'll link to in the post, talks about really it's a matter of training yourself to let go. It's not about how we raise our kids, because our kids are going to be who they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, you could have a very negative reaction to helicopter parenting. Some kids will really resent that, I'm sure.
Right. And then if you're too helicoptery, I think that you're not letting the kids learn for themselves and kind of experience life. I know one of our fans, Paul, and I'm probably going to mispronounce his last name, Psyopic, was featured in a Canadian news story that actually talked about this bubble wrap kids thing too. And it was about slow parenting. And he mentioned that, you know, if you hover until they're 18 and then they go off to university, how are they going to know how to be responsible adults when they go off to school? So, you know, at some point you have to let go, and, you know, it makes sense to kind of let go gradually and more kind of in early stages of life and kind of let them learn on their own while they're kind of under your wing, so they're not just going crazy when they go off to college.
Right. Someone once gave me the analogy of a spring, which I thought was clever. Like, if you have a spring on a desk or on your hand and you let your hand off, the spring's just going to go crazy and go all over the place. But if you slowly release the spring, release the pressure little by little, when you let your hand off, it's going to sit there and be, you know, it's just going to sit there. So you can sort of liken that to a child. If you suppress that spring, and then at 21 years old or 18, whenever they become adults, you let it go, they're going to go wild. They're not going to know what to do with themselves.
Right.
But if you slowly give them freedom little by little, and they'll learn what to do with that freedom responsibly. So, right. You know, I think about that a lot. And I, even as a toddler, I try and give him a few more liberties little by little. And I try and manage my own expectations of him. Like, do I expect him to be writing symphonies at this point, you know, because I'm a tiger mom? Or am I just going to let him learn at his own pace and be who he's going to be and then, you know, love him anyway? And I read, it speaks of Carl Honoré, I guess is how you say his name. I read In Praise of Slowness and I loved it. And I thought it was a really great book. And so I didn't realize he has this other book called Under Pressure, Reducing Our Children from the Culture of Hyper Parenting. But I added that to my list next because I do think it's worth it. And again, I think it's about training ourselves, not training our children, because I think children mm-hmm. are pretty good natured by and large. And, you know, we can really F them up if we try hard enough.
Thanks, Nat. That's really, really reassuring.
Well, you know, like sometimes I'm in a store, or especially raising a child in Manhattan. Once I was walking and I heard this woman, like she was crossing the street and her son was kind of fooling around and not crossing with his mom and letting go of his hand. And she grabbed him by the wrist and she goes, "Will you effing stop it?" And I mean, he couldn't have been more than six. And I thought, that's how you talk to your kid? I mean, I realized that she was really upset that he was, you know, not following protocol for safety.
Right.
But how is that child going to learn to deal with conflict when he's really frustrated by something that's not going his way? He's going to think that's acceptable language and that's an acceptable release of anger.
Right.
And I thought to myself, that this poor kid, does he really have a chance at becoming a nice person? And I don't want to judge that he will or he won't, but I don't think that's the best way to deal with that. And I thought, wow, we really can set our kids up for either being a good person or being a total a-hole. And that kid, I thought, you know, was had a better chance of being an a-hole than of being a good person.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard not to be judgy. And that's something I've really worked on. And in most situations, you can be like, well, you know, maybe they were choosing to do this or do that. But using profanity with kids, I think, is one of those things where it's like, no, that's pretty much never okay. So I feel safe on this one.
Yeah. Would you effing stop it? It's not the best way to discipline your kids.
So yeah.
I'm going to go on a limb on that one.
Yeah.
So I don't. Have you ever seen something like that in a store or somewhere where you're like, oh, I wish I could say something, but I'm not going to?
I'm sure I have. I've been really trying to not, you know, make judgments on other people's parenting, because I know that sometimes there are just those moments of frustration where I probably look like an awful parent too, and you never know if you're catching someone in their worst moment. But you know, I try to bite my tongue and say, you know, I'm sure they're just having a bad day, or you know, I hope this is not how they treat their children all the time.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty good at that. Like, I don't judge what other people, even if they feed their kids something different, if they're still using a binky at a certain, I never say anything because I don't really care what someone else is doing. And I realize you make your own choices. And that's one of the few examples where I'm like, wow, note to self, never do that.
Right.
So anyhow, well, you know, that's why we end our show with little victories, is so that we can end on a positive note instead of with things that, you know, we don't want to do. And little victories is a way for us to just congratulate ourselves for making one more milestone in our child's lives or in our parenting lives that says we're getting it done. So I guess I can share one this week to wrap up the show if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so my little victory is that Miles is taking naps at school now.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So it means that he's really adjusted. He eats there. He sleeps there. He's able to take a nap with the other kids, and he likes it there. So daycare was really hard adjustment for me, and I knew that it would be, but I really just wanted him to enjoy being around other kids and playing and socializing. So the nap thing it just started on Monday, and he's actually asleep there now, was a big little milestone for me.
So does he lay on a little mat, or do they have a pack and play or something that he sleeps in, or how does that work?
They have cots, and you bring you bring them a sheet, and then you take it home at the end of the week and you wash it.
How
then
cute!
You bring it back. Yeah, I did have to send him with a stuffed animal. He needed something familiar because he wasn't otherwise going to do that. But he's able to sleep now with the other little kids, and it just makes me feel so good. It gives me an extra, you know, because I was taking them there at 9, picking him up at 12:30, and then bringing him home to sleep in his own bed. And so, which, you know, I guess affords me the same amount of time.
Yeah, that's what we do with Nick.
Yeah. But, you know, to have him be able to sleep there, it makes me, you know, I'm getting my money's worth because I don't, you know, daycare is expensive. And so I like to think that I'm actually getting the you know, more time for my buck.
Right.
But also just to know that he feels comfortable enough there is really great.
And that's cool. So if it's a cot, it's kind of like a little bed. So it's almost like a thing that might help with a transition eventually to a big boy bed.
I'm hoping. Although, you know, I don't really know when I'm going to feel comfortable with that. And maybe someone else, you know, can write in on the show notes when we transition to that. I don't know. Do you have a plan for that yet? He's almost 2, right?
Yeah, I'm holding out for now. I think, you know, eventually when baby number 2 hopefully comes along, that might kind of hasten the process, because ideally we won't be buying a second crib and we'll be able to transition Nick to a big boy bed and have the second baby do the crib. So that's probably going to be the decision maker for us. So we've got a little time to think about it.
But, you know, just like bottles, like I wasn't even putting any pressure on myself at all to transition off of bottles until I started reading about it. And I'm like, oh, well, now I got to care about this. And so I'm going to try and stay away from any information about rushing to a daybed.
No, and I don't think there is any rush. I mean, I think the longer the general perception that I've seen is the longer you can keep them in the crib, the better, because they're safe in there. They're not getting into stuff. I don't think there's any need to rush to a big boy bed. I haven't heard anything that would make me think that there's a timeline that needs to be followed. It's just most kids start climbing out.
Right.
So I think that's kind of the turning point for most people. If the kid won't stay in the crib, it's time to move to the big boy bed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have to go. Well, I read this, I forget which book it was, about sort of reward charts and getting them, you know, to not get out of bed. So we'll get there. We're going to get there in our beta process.
Oh, life is full of little challenges.
It is. It is.
Especially motherhood.
Yes. Again, why we end on little victories. Well, feel free to share your little victories with us, little or small. We always applaud other people's successes in parenthood more than we point out failures. I want to point that out, because motherhood, we're just trying to get through it together. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. thing and it's a hard thing, which is why we have each other.
Excellent.
So thanks so much for joining us today on the Mommy Beta Podcast. We'll be back here next week with another set of mommies and another set of issues to talk about. We always appreciate your contributions. You can email mb@mommybeta.com. You can ring in anywhere on the site or Facebook or Twitter. Those things are available to you as well. Thanks for joining. Have a great another week of parenting.
Bye, everybody.
You and me, happy as can be, flying through the park on our bikes on a Sunday afternoon. You and me, rolling on the floor, practicing your somersaults, your cartwheels, your donkey kicks and more. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud of you. Drawing pictures wild and free while the paint goes flying. Your big smile, it brightens up the room. You and me reading books in bed, your head on my shoulder, your eyes on the pages ahead. How did you grow so big overnight? How did you get so smart and bright? Yesterday you were asleep in my arms. Today you're growing off the charts. I'm so proud.